Hello and welcome to FinTech Impact. I'm your host, Jason Pereira. Today on the show, I have Madeline Armijo, co-founder and COO of Dispatch. Dispatch is a platform that allows financial advisors to tie together multiple disparate systems in order to exchange information specifically around identity to eliminate errors and, importantly, dual entry, everyone's least favorite form of entry. And with that, here's my interview with Madeline. Madeline, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks so much for having me, Jason.
My pleasure. So Madeline Armijo of Dispatch, tell us about Dispatch.
Yeah, so you actually summed it up perfectly. I would say you did a great job. So Dispatch helps advisors sync their client data across their tech stack. So simply put, we want to eliminate manual workflows. We see a lot of times advisors have teams of people that have these manual processes stitched together just to make their client data flow nicely.
Excellent. So we're going to get into what data and how you do that shortly. But before we get there, let's start by talking about the origin of the company. How did it come to be?
Sure. So I was fortunate enough to meet my two co-founders at our last company, another wealth tech company in this space focused on investment management. But one thing that we all heard over and over when we were talking to advisors was that data is really hard to manage. So we'd start out by talking about investments, and then almost always the conversation would shift to data management. And that was the real problem that they were trying to tackle. And so we talked about it quite a bit and how can we actually solve this problem? A lot of people in wealth tech are trying to solve it. How can we solve it in a way that one is different, but two would solve it once and for all? And so that's how Dispatch was born.
Excellent. So let's talk about the solution. All right, let's get to how you're fixing this, because that's a tall order, right? How are you fixing this problem?
Sure. So when we looked at the space and we looked to see how others were solving the problem, most people thought we should build an all-in-one solution, right? So I think that is a really nice way to keep your data under one roof and make sure it plays nicely across your entire tech stack when you have one architect of the tech stack. The problem with that is when you have a more complex firm, you don't often want a tech stack that's designed by one architect. You want these best in breed products that are going to really solve for your client's unique needs, your firm's unique needs. So when we look at it that way, the challenge and the problem that we're really trying to solve was, how do we take different streams of data and normalize them or translate them in a way that can be recognized across various different systems? And so it became really clear to us that nobody was doing this. Nobody was acting as the sort of like neutral party in the middle of the entire wealth tech ecosystem, directing the data and thinking about integrations. And integrations are costly, they're complex. Every software firm has to deal with it, and they don't want to, right? It's not their core product. And so why isn't there somebody that is taking that burden on and translating and normalizing and maintaining the data in the integrations so the other software companies don't have to? So that's what we do.
Yeah, this is the classic money's made by bundling and unbundling solutions all over the place. And yes, you can get a turnkey. Here's something that does just about everything you're going to need, but you're never going to be fully happy with it because something else is better, something else is preferable, something else provides a value you want to do, and it's just not going to talk to it. Yes, there is no One Ring. There is no God platform. It just doesn't work. But then again, now we have the fragmentation issue where it's like the second you introduce that, now you've got six different systems and nothing talks to each other, so you lose efficiency. So it's this constant tug of war that people have had to face. So I think you were, again, the entire, let's not build another all-in-one because frankly, it's going to be good at some things and suck at a lot of other ones, was a smart move. So, okay. So you decided not to do that. You decided instead to effectively be pipes, right?
Be pipes. We see ourselves as like a public utility. We want to take the onus off of the advisors from having to deal with the manual processes and the fintechs from having to build and maintain integrations with each other and let us worry about it. And so that's where data orchestration really shines. And so you can think about orchestration as an air traffic controller. And we are sitting at the middle of all the chaos and we're directing the data and telling everybody where they need to go.
Excellent. So let's also set the stage for what data you're doing, okay? Because you're not doing everything, because everything would be insane, right? Like everything from financial planning software data to custodial, like transaction records, you're not going there. Where have you drawn the line on what is the data that you're going to work with versus not?
Yeah, absolutely right. So we only work with client data, so PII. And there are a lot of solutions out there that kind of touch the market data and the portfolio data and the transaction data. and they work pretty well. And that didn't seem to be a big need. Where client data, the complexity lies in client data because it's all so unique, and all of the different software systems have unique field mappings and the way they recognize things and label things. So you can have one software system that is last name, first name, and another software system that is full name. And so how do you translate and normalize that data? And again, that's what we think we're really good at. And that's where nobody else has really tackled this problem.
Yeah. And to date, a lot of integrations exist in the US market, but they're all point to point, right? It's all one to another. So basically you would dump everything typically into a CRM, and maybe that CRM passes on to something else, but that requires another trigger. So that's problematic. Instead, you're basically saying, we'll be Grand Central Station. We'll conduct this information and push it to where it needs to be. So with that, we're really talking about, like you said, so we're talking like the standard name, address, phone numbers, social security numbers, anything specifically unique to that person that doesn't involve actually like managing the account or the investment, correct?
Yep, that's exactly right. And the beauty of a lot of the CRM is that everything is customizable. And mm-hmm. So your firm has a unique set of data that you pull during onboarding.
Yeah.
Right? Like we can configure your onboarding experience to match that. And we can make sure it syncs across your CRM. If there's certain points in that data set that only go to your financial planning tool, that only go to the custodian, we make sure that happens.
So that's happening. And you're doing an effective job at that. And it's funny, you said something. The beauty about CRMs is they're highly customizable. Yes, that's also the curse, because as anyone who's ever been through a migration between CRMs knows, anything that doesn't match up standard requires more work to migrate. Congratulations, optionality is killing us.
That is definitely a consideration.
Yeah, so that brings up an interesting question. Some of these things are pretty bog standard, right? Where like the way Salesforce, the way Redtail, the way InvestNet, the way all these companies you're working with basically categorize that information, most people use that default cell, right? There's not a lot of customization around that sort of thing. How much would you say you are managing of the standard stuff that you're not even in touch versus how much does the normal engagement require you to get into customized data?
Yes, every single one of our clients has customized data. And that is somewhat of a byproduct of the advisors we work with. We generally work with larger, more complex organizations who require that customization. But we also think that's going to be the trend for the future. Like most advisors, if given the option, probably do want some level of customization. And so we've designed our platform to be very thoughtful and methodical, and that we can take all of that customization and it feels like it's a customized product for you, but there's a standard way in which we ingest and translate that data. And so every kind of engagement with us almost feels like professional services, but it's not. To be clear, we are a platform company. The very first thing we do is we have a really in-depth kind of consulting session with you through the sales process and through implementation. And what that looks like is, if you've ever engaged with us, you're probably laughing because our sales process does not feel like a sales process. We're not going to get on and show you a demo, but we are going to do a pretty long series of meetings with everyone on your team, and we're going to untangle your workflows. And so it feels like you hired a consultant to get everybody in your organization aligned and on the same page and really nail down how you want data to flow through the organization and how different teams should come in and out, how different software systems should come in and out. And once we have that master plan, then we can move into implementation. And again, it feels very customizable because it is. It's going to be unique to your firm's kind of needs. But on our end, it's a standard process, and the platform is meant to take in all of these customized data inputs and make it standard.
Excellent. So take me through, so that's the onboarding, right? You're basically helping with that. Take me through the experience of actually working with your platform. What does that look like for an end user?
Yeah. So for an end user, it depends, right? It's all configurable. So if the advisor has the ultimate say in how much or how little the end user should engage in the platform. So on one end of the spectrum, we have advisors that say, oh, I want to be hands-off. I want the end user to do all of the heavy lifting. So in that scenario, you would have an end user receive an email invitation for the platform. They can upload all of their kind of personal information, those documents that an advisor wants to collect anyway, like a tax statement or a driver's license, and you can just scan them into the system, and we'll use OCR to extract the data. You can also type it in, and that is fully on the end client. We also have experiences where the advisor is like, nope, we're going to do it all. This is a white glove experience. Like the end client doesn't do anything with the platform. So it really all depends.
Fair enough. So bottom line is that information gets input. Does it get automatically pushed anywhere? Is there any kind of in-between?
Yeah, exactly. It gets input into the system. And then prior to, like during implementation prior to launch, we've configured all of the different settings that you want to use.
So it's meant to run on Rails once the actual thing happens. And I don't have to worry about it once it's done. Perfect. Okay.
Exactly. Great.
That's really the core of the product. But you also talk on your site about client onboarding and account opening. Can you talk about how you help facilitate that? Clearly, you're building off of the strength of your integrations in order to do that.
So getting clients up and running quickly is much more, as any advisor would know, it's much more than just collecting documents and entering data into the CRM system, right? So there is oftentimes the account opening process, which can also take a lot of time from internal teams, take a long time from the custodians to get approval. There's still forms involved in a lot of cases. And because we're collecting all of that data, we can very easily offer a digital solution to enable that easy account opening process. And so the beauty of our platform and working with a multitude of different custodians is that we hide all of that complexity from the users. And so an advisor can go onto the platform and say, I'm going to open up a joint account for this husband and wife and an individual account for the wife, and they're going to be at two different custodians. And it's all one workflow. And they don't have to deal with the various forms and logging in and out of the various custodial activities. It's all like a couple screens on our platform. We are taking all the data and then we're orchestrating the process in the background.
Excellent. So you're helping at the end of the day, you're facilitating what you were doing before. Just you've changed the front end a little bit, but now you're more purposeful where it's going, which is valuable because at the end of the day, yeah, it's one of the more painful parts of the business, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, what everything I just described, you spend time in our product in the beginning, like we want you to use the sort of very easy account opening solution. But then after that, we largely go away. So we operate, when you're up and running, your accounts are opened and your client data is in the process, we operate silently behind your tech stack. We want you to use your tools that you chose, right? Like the makers of those tools did a really good job designing them. We want you to use them. We don't want to abstract those processes away and put them in one big kind of like super dashboard or super app. Yeah, exactly. So we're just in the background doing our thing, making sure the data is going where it needs to go.
Excellent. All right. One of the things I wanted to chat about, which is ironic given the statement about being in the background, was your design. We had a good conversation in the pre-call about how UX is a big focus of what it is you guys are doing. Care to speak to that and basically how you feel that you're standing out from the rest of the crowd in that space?
Yeah, you used in that pre-call, you used what has now become one of my favorite phrases, which is a consumer-grade product for wealth tech. And it's so true. I think that advisors and everybody in wealth tech have been robbed by consumer grade user experiences. Mm-hmm. When we look at the technology we use in the rest of our lives, like my DoorDash app and Uber Eats and Alexa and everything else, like those are such delightful experiences. I am happy to use those products. I want to open my app and see what like improvements there are and like how have they thought for me. They're just delightful experiences. And so that doesn't exist in wealth tech. And we oftentimes get these kind of like Microsoft, like Windows 99 types of experiences.
Because it might be from 99, but continue.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't think that UX is something that has been really a focus or a strength in the software in our industry. So it's something that we do think a lot about. One of my co-founders, who's the head of product at Dispatch, was senior at the product team at Uber and spent a lot of time thinking about user experience at kind of one of these like delightful apps. So we want people to be like excited when they use Dispatch and say, oh, they thought of that for me. That's great. We want to delight people.
Yep. There's a saying that has come up many times in this podcast, and that's effectively that Amazon got us used to instant and Apple got us used to beautiful. And it's true, because at the end of the day, a lot of the solutions we have are utilitarian and engineered, right? And often the priorities, yeah, but it does that. Let's just stop and move on to the next function, as opposed to, yeah, but does it do it in a way that makes me feel like I'm chewing on glass? Like that's a bit of an exaggeration, But yes, I find that all too often, not enough thought goes into my day-to-day interaction with the software.
Yeah. Like, when was the last time that you used sort of a work-related software that you were excited to use?
I get to play with lots of work-related softwares that I'm excited to use because most of them, a lot of them are in development and really cool new stuff. So I'm the wrong person to ask that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, yes, I think most people in the wealth tech space are going to say, yeah, you know what? You're right. A lot of this stuff is brutal.
Yeah. And actually, if I ask myself that question, there are some non-wealth tech specific tools I really love. Like, every time I log on to Ramp, which is like corporate credit card management, I love it. It's a really great experience. So anyways, that's just something that we think and invest a lot in.
As you should. So this is where you're at right now, right? You managed to integrate with a number of partners, key partners, big players in the space. Where do you see this going? Besides going deeper vertically, is there any kind of horizontal place? I'm guessing like more integrations. You tell me where you're heading.
Yeah. So I think that going broadly across financial services makes a lot of sense. When you think about the other parts of an advisor's business, or not even an advisor, but kind of other professionals in financial services that are adjacent to advisory, there's a lot of applications and a lot of the same use cases. So when you think about insurance or real estate, or tax preparation, I think that we can save a lot of time by tackling a lot of these industry-specific tools and providing a really good experience.
Yep, I would say so. Yeah, I think the danger with you guys is people start pushing you into going down the rabbit hole of other forms of data. They get more complex and more difficult, right? I don't think you want to get into the transaction data issue.
It's interesting. Nobody has pushed us towards that. And I think that there's... Yeah, and maybe that changes, but I find that with transaction data and like custodial data feeds, there's a lot of people in that space already. And so it is like harder to differentiate too, because it is fairly straightforward. A price is a price. A position is a position.
Yeah. I'd say though, it's the danger is that, and all too often, they're like, oh yeah, but I'm already paying these other guys for this. It'd be nice if you did this as well. And it's what I've basically termed the, pardon my language, shitty CRM problem. Where your product does X and it does it really well. And someone's like, it'd be really nice if I could put my notes in here. Next thing you're supporting a shitty CRM on top of something that was never designed to be a shitty CRM in the first place. So as I tell everybody, just know what you're not. That's the most important lesson you can get in this business, and just be really good at what you're doing.
I love that so much. I think philosophically, we're very much aligned. We often see these kind of Frankenstein systems that you have a wealth tech company that was really good at this. And they're like, oh, we could do that. Or yeah, we could buy them. And then it just becomes this like a compilation of something that nobody really wants.
Or, you know, but the bigger problem is that the core product, which was world-class, starts to suffer because the dev cycles go to maintaining these two also-rans that could have just integrated with some off-the-shelf partner and accomplished the same thing. But no, the clients wanted one thing and yet led them the path of destruction. More than one company has been led down the path of destruction by client demands that weren't properly curated.
Yes.
Is what it
yes,
is.
Yes.
Excellent. So before we wrap up, there's three questions I'd like to ask that end on a positive note. The first one is, if you had one wish for something you could change in your company or the industry as a whole, what would it be?
I would wish for, so often, almost all the time, let's say 99% of the time, when you are buying software from a technology provider, you are going to get on a call and say, hey, nice to meet you. This is what I have. I'd like to see a demo. And the software salesperson is going to go, great, let me show you. And they pull up their demo, and the buyer has to determine based on those series of clicks and what they're seeing through a demo that, again, may or may not be real. Like, you don't know if you're actually seeing the real product.
Oh, yeah. People try to showroom me more than once.
You might not be seeing the real product. They're going to make a really expensive software decision. And that is really bad behavior on both the buyer and the seller. As a seller, you should never do a demo in a first call or even a fifth call. A demo should be highly customizable and come at the end of the sales cycle so you can make sure you're showing the appropriate use case for your buyer after you've understood their buying behavior. And as a buyer, you should understand what you need to buy and not just want to see fancy buttons and clicks. And so I think that's software buying in this industry is an interesting process and not necessarily at the level of professional scrutiny that other industries put their buyers and sellers through.
I hear you. I'm usually the person who asks them to basically click another button they hadn't planned on clicking and then suddenly gets a response that, oh, that doesn't work yet. Although I look at a lot of basically stuff that's still in development, but being showroomed is a real problem in this industry. The second question I have for you is, what's been the biggest challenge in the company to where it is today?
Hiring. I could say that all day long. So the number one most important thing that we do is hire good people. That is it. That is me and my co-founders. That is our most important task. Not getting clients, not building the product, hiring good people. Like, that is it. And it's taken us a year and a half to build our small but mighty team of 15 because we have an extremely high bar for talent. It takes a really long time to get through an interview cycle with us because we're so incredibly picky. But at the end of all of that, you have this like world-class team of Olympians. Like, our engineers are amazing. And that's what allows us to move really fast and build really great products, is because we only hire the best of the best people. We're not outsourcing to dev shops overseas. This is the lifeblood of our company, is the talent.
Excellent. People are often, one of the biggest answers to this is the challenge of staffing and finding the right people. So not surprising. And the last question I have for you is, what excites you the most about what it is you're working on and keeps you getting out of bed in the morning to fight the good fight?
Oh my gosh, I love this. I love this more than anything. My co-founders and I are always like laughing because we say we don't have hobbies and we don't talk about anything else but this, because we just love it so much. There's nothing more thrilling than building a product that people want and need and are excited to use with a group of colleagues that you enjoy and trust. Every single day, I get to get up and solve interesting problems with a group of really talented people. I couldn't love my job more.
Excellent. Madeline, thank you so much for taking the time. Very much appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
So that was my interview with Madeline Armejo, co-founder and CEO of Dispatch. If you enjoyed that interview, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, or your podcast. Until next time, take care.
This podcast was brought to you by Woodgate Financial, an award-winning financial planning firm catering to high-net-worth individuals and their families. To learn more, go to woodgate.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, or find more episodes at jasonpereira.ca.